Browns fans, don't miss A Legacy Unleashed at the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, celebrating the greatest and most iconic moments in franchise history. For a limited time, now through April 21st, fans can immerse themselves in the Browns' rich history and get up close and personal with legends like Ozzie Newsome, Josh Cribbs, Bernie Kosar, Eric Metcalf, and many others. A Legacy Unleashed for a limited time at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Get your tickets at profootballhof.com today. Hey everyone, welcome to our Friday edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Dan Lobby with Doug Maurice, Ashley Bastock, Irie Harris. Normally, of course, this is when you would hear our game preview pod, but the Browns are playing the Houston Texans this week, and who really cares about the Houston Texans? So I thought this would be a good opportunity to take our normal preview pod, and we'll still make some game picks at the end, take our normal preview pod and turn it into a Deshaun Watson roundtable, because that, of course, is the story of the week. Deshaun Watson is back for the Cleveland Browns after serving his 11-game suspension for violating the league's personal conduct policy. He will start against his former team. A lot of storylines here, and I just thought this was a good opportunity to take a look at some big picture questions concerning Deshaun Watson and his time with the Browns. I want to just start with the big one, and this is a true or false question. And we'll kind of just go around the horn and get everybody's thoughts on this and discuss all these questions. But true or false, the Browns have to win a Super Bowl to make the Deshaun Watson trade a success. Now, I'm not putting a time frame on this. It doesn't necessarily have to be in the next 5 years. It is a five-year contract, but barring something crazy, Deshaun Watson will be here for a long time. But however long his time as the quarterback is for this team, for this to be a success, true or false, the Browns have to win a Super Bowl. Doug, what do you think?
So I feel like I do have experience with questions like this, because it's the kind of thing that happens with Ohio State all the time. Right? Ohio State, you have to win a national championship in a time frame. If Ryan Day doesn't win a national championship in the next 5 years, that kind of thing, it's constantly a question with Ohio State. And I very much am a believer in being in the mix, consistently being in the mix and taking the field 17 weeks a year in the regular season as a legitimate Super Bowl contender, that kind of thing, being in the playoff, giving your fans the opportunity the entire offseason and the entire season to believe that you could win the Super Bowl, that every day you wake up and think, my team could win the Super Bowl this year. I think there's such incredible value in that, that at times I don't want to put too much on actually doing it, because it's hard and lots of teams are good and you need a little luck and you have to be healthy and all those things that go into it. So normally I would say false, almost no matter what to this question, because I just think there's so many ways that you can have so many days and weeks and months and Sundays of happy, hopeful football. But because of what Deshaun Watson was accused of off the field, I say true. So that makes it true. So every other circumstance, I'm a blanket false. But because of what they took on and what they did to so many fans of this franchise with that decision, I say true.
I think I agree with you because of that. Because you gave up, he gave up three first-round picks. You paid him $230 million. You took on this just absolute monster of, at best, a PR nightmare. But obviously, that's kind of just belittling what these accusations are, to just call it that. You can't make this move, and you can't mire yourself in this controversy if it doesn't ultimately pay off in you winning a championship. And Ashley, I guess I'd almost look at, like, it's easy to say, hey, it would just be cool to be in the mix, like Doug was saying. It would be cool to be in the mix, and it would be cool to just maybe make it to a Super Bowl or whatever. But then I also think about a guy like Patrick Mahomes, who doesn't carry the baggage that Deshaun Watson brings here. But let's say Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't overthrow that wide receiver in the Super Bowl, or that Tyreek Hill doesn't come open late on that fourth down, and the Chiefs don't win that Super Bowl. Are we talking about Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs differently? I know it's a different situation, and maybe it's just a false equivalency, but I think even a guy like that because of his talent level, it's like, you got to win a Super Bowl with that guy. You just have to. And then when you throw in everything else with Deshaun Watson, who is, I think, maybe not as equally talented as Patrick Mahomes, but maybe he is. He's close. It just feels like you've got to win a Super Bowl with this guy.
I think you absolutely have to win a Super Bowl for this to be a success. You know, Doug, I thought I was going to have a prime chance to disagree with something you said, and I didn't know you were going to give an incredible, nuanced answer that I 100% agreed with, and that pains me on some level. you are absolutely right. And, you know, I know, like, I'm going to use an NBA comparison, even though, like, these two leagues are not all the time entirely comparable. But, like, I think about LeBron James, right? And how great of a player LeBron James was. But what was the number one discussion of his career for so long? It was that he had to go to Miami to win a championship, and he couldn't do it here. If the Cavs did not win that championship in 2016, I think not only would the discussion around the Cavs be different, the discussion around LeBron James would be different. It wouldn't have mattered that they made it to four straight finals, that he made it to eight straight. It would have just been different. And I think it's like that in the NFL for quarterbacks who are on a comparable level for this league. Like you said, Dan, Patrick Mahomes, like, I think the discussion around those Chiefs would absolutely be totally different about, is their window closing? Are they wasting an opportunity? Is he really the guy? Is Andy Reid the guy to coach this team? Does he need more weapons? All of those discussions would probably be happening right now. And I think, you know, of course, if the Browns don't win a Super Bowl, those discussions are a lot more serious, I think, and nuanced because of the off-the-field allegations Deshaun Watson has faced, like Doug correctly pointed out. I think the only reason you go and take on a guy who, like you said, Dan, at best has this PR storm following him, at best, the only reason you do that is because you think he can win a Super Bowl. Like, you think he is the deciding factor in you winning a Super Bowl. That's the only reason that it is worth taking on all of this and all of the risk and all of the distraction and all of the criticism you are going to get.
You've heard all of us kind of make that case. I guess to me, that the thing that keeps rattling in my brain is, like, you know, just somebody watching all this, and at the end, somebody who's completely detached from the Browns and is just kind of observing the NFL from above, just looking at this and saying, you did all that just to lose in the divisional round? Or you did all that, you went through all that and took all that on just to lose in the AFC championship game? Like, I know Browns fans would give anything for that, but, you know, you're a guy from Philly. You've seen a team that you know well win a Super Bowl. You see what it means to a city. Like, it's just different. Do they have to win a Super Bowl to call this a success in the end?
You know what, Dan, respectfully speaking, asking if the Browns have to win a Super Bowl for this to work is like asking if, you know, you should use a bag to clean up whenever your dog uses a bathroom. And I mean that within this. That from Andrew Berry to the Haslams, they sat down and it was, I don't want to put it as like an angel and a devil on both shoulders, but there was like, how about this? The red pill and the blue pill. The red pill was deciding with them winning, waiting longer after this long history of losing, thinking at some point this will come, or morals and going after a quarterback that at best, as we've seen, who hasn't even fully hit his prime yet, is a top five caliber quarterback and can lead a winning team when in the right situation on a terrific team full of talent. So they chose between winning or morals, and they went with winning. So in the end of this all, just, you know, within hypotheticals, if this was not to work, and as you say, they lose in the divisional round, they're lost with both. If you're going to choose between winning and morals, just like this franchise has with the PR nightmare, everything that has occurred since Watson came in March, you're thinking, all right, I give my morals away, but we at least have to win just to kind of make up for it to show, hey, this is why we did that, even though I know that's normally not the right thing to do. If this team, this roster doesn't, you know, if this does not go the way that we expect it to, then yeah, it's a failure on both ends. So if you're going to choose one over the other, at least make sure you come up with that and not just be left with nothing at that. So yes, this team does have to win.
Yeah. Is it kind of that simple? They sort of, when they made this trade, they chose to kind of win at all costs. And so now you have to win at all costs.
in a city where the chase for championships has taken on something else, right? Right. I mean, that's the thing too. That's part of this too, that obviously the Cavs at least got the city a championship, but that the Browns have not even been to a Super Bowl amplifies everything. And we have become, as a sports society, like we are championship obsessed, right? I mean, that we define everybody's careers, we define legacies, right or wrong, but we define them by how many rings you have, even if you are a great player and maybe not having the rings. I don't know if this is true. It's kind of what Ashley said. This might be an urban legend. I'm not even sure where it happened, but I think there was a player, I can't remember what sport it was, who was arguably the best player in his sport. And then when he left that city, a local publication ran something. It was like a picture of him with a little arrow that said no rings on the guy's hand, because you were so obsessed with championships that like that was the only thing that mattered, right? Of all those things, where's the championship? I don't know if that doesn't sound like a thing that the publication would do that again, but it's the kind of urban legend that crops up around the absolute championship or bust mentality that, again, when you put it in Cleveland, when you add everything that comes with Deshaun Watson and those accusations, it amplifies something that might have been there anyway, right? To some degree, it would have been, because Patrick Mahomes, right? Kansas City has won championships in that city. Patrick Mahomes has nothing. But yet, Dan, you're contending there would be a discussion around him if he didn't have one. So we're most of the way there to championship or bust with great players, no matter what.
Yeah, it's just, that's how we talk about guys, right? And then when you just add in everything that the Browns took on and kind of like what Irie was saying, sort of, you know, throwing any sort of like, yeah, maybe we shouldn't do this, just throwing that out the window because you think you have a team that's basically a great quarterback away from winning. And because you know you are in a sport where the fastest and best way to contend year after year is to have a great quarterback. And there's only like, what, five truly great quarterbacks at any given moment in the NFL, if that, and they very rarely become available. And when they do become available, they rarely look at a city like Cleveland and say, oh yeah, I think I want to go there. All of that sort of conspired here, and it happened for reasons that it happened because, A, he wanted out of Houston, and then, of course, he faced 20-plus lawsuits for sexual misconduct during these massage sessions, and it all conspired to him being available to a team like Cleveland, and they pulled the trigger on it, and I guess we have consensus on this. They do ultimately have to win a Super Bowl with Deshaun Watson at quarterback for us to look back on this and say it made sense. Is there more, though? Like, is it just, hey, go win a bunch of football games and all is forgiven? Or, like is there more to it, I guess? Like, does he...
Sorry, not to cut you off, Dan. I'm going to jump in and say yes. Like, I think, and I said this, I've been talking about this, and this is obviously, I think, an incredibly nuanced thing to be talking about, but we talked about this yesterday, just the two of us on the podcast, and I think it's about more than just winning games for a lot of people. I think, like you said, there is a segment of people who I think are okay with this move right now, as is, that they only want to talk about football, they don't want to talk about the off-field stuff. There's a segment of people who are so mad about this move, and I think rightfully so, that they don't even want to watch the Browns anymore. And I think maybe the extreme ends of that spectrum are never going to change. To get more goodwill, which I think you have to remember too, Deshaun Watson was a guy who before these allegations was kind of beloved in the city of Houston for doing this, for doing things like giving his first game check to arena workers who were affected by, I think it was Hurricane Harvey that year, who did these things with community outreach. So I think he knows kind of how to do these things. But I think for a lot of people, it's not just going to take that and getting involved in charitable causes and the community. It's going to take showing some actual remorse, which I think a lot of people, again, feel like he has not done. You know, there was that sort of pseudo apology that we got before the Jacksonville game that I think we said at the time, like, I don't know if this is as strong as people are thinking of an I'm sorry that people were thinking that it was. Because then in that August 18th press conference, he kind of came back out and maintained his innocence. And he has maintained his innocence. And of course, today he did not take non-football questions. So he didn't do it today. But, you know, we can assume that's all we've heard from him so far. So I think for a lot of people, they're going to need to see some actual remorse from him over all, you know, over two dozen sexual misconduct allegations is a lot. The scope of this has not been seen in this league. You know, Sue L. Robinson in her initial ruling said this is kind of, this is unprecedented. And it's true. It is unprecedented. But I think that more than anything is kind of the X factor ingredient that he's going to need to get some goodwill and for this team to get some goodwill back and people to trust that, okay, this was a good decision, that it's not just about winning games for either party here. It's about him stepping up, I think, and showing some kind of remorse for all of this, however he wants to do that, whenever he wants to do that. But I don't think you're truly going to get, like, you know, loads of people back on your side overnight. It's going to take, I think, years of this and years of people getting used to seeing him out on the field again.
Yeah, that sounds right. I think at some point you want to hear him say, like, you know what, I went through this counseling as part of this suspension and it gave me an opportunity to reflect on what happened and the situations that that I was in, and just reflect on kind of what he did wrong, or, you know, what was alleged here in these lawsuits, and start to kind of show some contrition and, you know, do some things in the community that sort of changed the narrative on him. So look, this is all complicated. I know it's complicated for Browns fans. And, you know, as we kind of move on now to a little more of the football side of this, you know, there's some fans that just aren't going to want to root for Deshaun Watson, and we get that, and that makes sense. And there's some fans that are, and that's their right too.
Yeah,
I think the people with the strongest feelings, like, aren't listening to this pod and aren't going to watch the game on Sunday. I think some of those people, like you might have lost them, and some people are just ready for the football. And I think you're allowed to be ready for the football. And so I wonder. I just think if he wins and his time fades, I just think that's how, good or bad, right? That's how it works a lot of times. That I think if he wins and he doesn't talk about it and nothing new happens and he just kind of goes and is, you know, he had that community stuff that he did before. And then the people that you lost with the decision to bring him here are gone. And then I don't know if like contrition is going to come or is needed, because, and I'm not saying you're wrong, Ashley, but like,
no, I think it's okay here, to be cynical about this somewhat too.
If you believe his version of events, right, which some people do, and again, he was never indicted. If you believe that, or you think, listen, hey man, there's lots of imperfect people playing sports. I'm just here for the game, which also that's an absolute, sports is supposed to be entertainment and a way to kind of get away from life. So those people, I don't know that they need anything else other than like, let's go win some football games. So I almost feel like just there's a world of like Deshaun Watson, like link to all the stories and things that were said so that people, if you want it, right? Like in a digital world, if you want to know about the accusations and about the off the field things, click here. But if you don't, this is a football story. Because the football is being played, right? I mean, I don't, and it's kind of up to the consumer almost, because I think the Browns have made their choice, and I think Watson has made his choice about how he's going to handle this going forward, which is, I'm not going to talk about it anymore, and that's it.
Well, and I think I think that's important to note, right? Deshaun Watson, because of who he is, has a microphone to talk about this at any time he wants. Like, even though he just talked about this today, if he walked in the facility tomorrow and said, hey, you know what? I want to tell my side of the story. They would set up a podium for him and we would talk to Deshaun Watson for however long Deshaun Watson wanted to talk about this. Like, there are a lot of people who maybe don't have a voice, who will never have a voice, like, you know, who maybe believe they were, you know, wronged by him in these massage appointments, who will choose to never talk about it. And that's their right. And I would understand why they wouldn't want to talk about this, given everything that's happened with this. But he does. This is how he's choosing to handle it now. And I think because of that, you know, we saw it today. You can only ask him so many questions about this. And I'm sure there are people who are mad who, you know, watch the press conference and think, why didn't we hammer him, quote unquote, more or whatever. But when you get no comments, like, that tells you what you need to know. And those are included. But that's the reality of the situation. He's chosen not to comment. That is his, you know, in an interview, you can do that. And that's what he's chosen to do. But I think that's a story as well. And that's why it's in my headline today from this. And I think that that's more than fair because that's what he signed up for. That's what the Browns signed up for. But this is tricky. This is not, if you can't tell from listening to these answers, this is not easy stuff. This is not easy. These are not easy conversations to have.
No, they aren't. And the one other thing too, you know, from the Browns side of it and the whole Super Bowl thing is no one gets called into the owner's office and gets to keep their job because they took a moral stand. You know, that's kind of the reality that Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski face in all of this too. Like, you go 9-8 and losing the divisional round every year, eventually you're going to get kicked out of the building. And that's sort of the conflict the NFL creates in situations like this, I think. Maybe you do want to say, no, I don't know if we want anything to do with this guy, but also,
right,
it's sort of our job to win football games.
When you come down to this trade being made, it comes back to that. The NFL is a business, right? Like, that's what the crux of all of this is and what people need to remember. The NFL is a business at the end of the day. So that's why winning games and what happens over the course of his career in Cleveland, I think, is so important to, you know, like we said, it's a big piece of him rehabilitating his image, the Browns rehabilitating their image for signing him. And I think, like Doug's saying, kind of like the piece to people being able to move on and think of him as a football player again.
And I will say, Dan, I think you're right. Right. Obviously, the football is what matters because that's what makes money and that's what gets trophies. And we long have had, it's a dual discussion. There's a Deshaun Watson discussion, the discussion that this franchise, that we cover the franchise. We're talking to listeners who care about the franchise in Cleveland. They chose to bring Deshaun Watson here. If something new happens with Deshaun Watson when he is a Brown, I don't know that the franchise can recover from it. So that is part of it too, that you are, yes, you have to win football games. You also chose to bring this person in, was not indicted. That's when everyone wanted, you know, right? Okay, the grand jury doesn't indict. There's not a criminal thing here that he is going on trial. Okay. If they brought this guy in and something new happens, Dan, everybody's done. And it won't, that yes, won't be the most important thing.
Yes.
Everybody involved.
Yeah.
The Haslams will never be forgiven. Andrew Berry will not be forgiven. Everybody's on the hook for this because you staked your reputation on that guy's reputation. So that also certainly matters.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think you're right. Okay, we're going to talk about the football side, but you know what? Let's take a break before we do that. So we'll take a break here, and then when we come back, we will get into a little more of the football side with Deshaun Watson's return to the field in Houston on Sunday. And welcome back to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. We're doing a Deshaun Watson roundtable. We'll do some picks at the end for Sunday's game. Also, Lance Reisland is going to tell us a little bit about what this offense could look like with Deshaun Watson. Irie, next question on our list. Which player benefits the most from Deshaun Watson's return for the Browns?
I'm just going to go with the obvious regarding Amari Cooper. Four-time Pro Bowl wide receiver, somebody that even with all of what we spoke about regarding Jacoby Brissett, the backup quarterback fitting within this offense and hopefully keeping this offense stable, this is still a squad that, you know, that will enter Sunday 11th in points per game and top five when it comes to passing yards per game. When you speak of Amari Cooper, who was top 15 in receiving yards, total receiving yards, top 7 in total touchdowns this season, and he was doing that with Brissett. This is no knock on Brissett's ability of being a quarterback because he's shown that he deserves to be a quarterback in this league. But we know what type of player he was and what he was limited and what he lacked. And he was still able to produce that with Cooper, who to Cooper's credit, is still amongst the top when it comes to some of these stats. And that just gives you the thought and potential between how this can happen skying through the roof between Watson and Cooper. I mean, this could be a duel straight out of Madden or something in that sense.
So a little behind the scenes here. Ashley and I recorded a podcast yesterday, and I said we were kind of going through Quincy Avery talked to Mary Kay and said that this was the most talented team that Deshaun Watson has played for. And I said kind of off the cuff on that podcast without doing any research that Amari Cooper was maybe the best receiver Deshaun Watson has played with, completely forgetting that DeAndre Hopkins existed as a human being.
I was like, player. I thought in real time.
I actually, I don't remember when it was, but I realized, like, wait a second. I don't want that in the podcast. I actually went out before the podcast went live. I cut that part and re-uploaded the new audio.
You are tricky, Dan. I thought something was missing when I listened back. Listeners, don't know, I listen back to every podcast. I've like gotten over the sound. Most people hate the sound of their own voice. I've gotten over that feeling. Dare I say I love the sound of my own voice? But
I love my voice.
Oh, your I know voice you fine. Love the sound love of your own voice, Chuck. I know that.
So
no,
good.
But I felt like something was missing, dude. You know what? Yeah. That was in real time. I remember thinking, like, is he forgetting DeAndre Hopkins? I'm not going to say anything.
You couldn't tell though. You couldn't tell that it was cut. It was great editing. It was very seamless. But
great job.
The reason I bring that up is like, you know, Deshaun Doug had this great connection with DeAndre Hopkins in Houston, and I think DeAndre probably has a fair amount to do with Deshaun's early success in his career and kind of developing into the quarterback he's been in. Amari Cooper is not DeAndre Hopkins, but he's really good. I mean, he's a top flight receiver. You know, I think I would probably put him in that tier just below the very, very top. And you know, like a guy like Hopkins in his prime, but I think Irie's right. There's some potential here for Amari Cooper, who's already on pace for a career year, to just have one of the best years of his career now that Watson is back.
So he's 13th in the league in receiving yards. He's 11th in targets. And so the question is he going to get the ball substantially more than that? Now, I think the thing we won't see is the handful of games where it was like, do they remember that Amari Cooper's on this team? Like, did they forget that he came on the trip? He has 3 targets, right? Didn't he have like maybe 2 games like that this year? But the games where he's, you know, he's had multiple games where he's had 100 receiving yards and he's been the focus of the offense, I wonder how much his production will actually increase. Because I do think you could almost make a case that, like, maybe everybody else are going to be bigger beneficiaries because Deshaun Watson might spread it around a little bit more. So I think it's a good answer, Irie. I am super curious about it because when you draw the line, and if you say right now he's 13th in receiving yards and 11th in targets. If you go now from here to the end of the season, will he be top 5 in the league in receiving yards with Deshaun Watson? Will he be top 5 in targets? Like, I don't know. And I wouldn't be shocked if it actually went down a little bit because Deshaun is going to be able to maybe get to other guys rather than leaning on Amari as much as Jacoby did at times.
I think the quality of those targets could go up, though. So it might be less targets, but it might be more quality targets and more opportunities for him to catch the ball and maybe run with it and make big plays. I think Irie's right on this. I think Amari Cooper needs to be like near the top of this list of guys that we talk about. And by the way, Irie did the research on the Amari target discrepancy game to game a few weeks ago.
You're right on that. And yeah, to your credit, Doug, like you say, yeah, there were many a games where, you know, the game before he's putting up 131 receiving yards. Halloween night for Cincinnati, you're thinking, wow, this is amazing. Look at him go open field. And then next game versus Miami, and he even said it in the presser too, only got 3 targets. But as he said in the presser, he caught every single one of those 3 targets to his credit. He still caught them, all 3 of them. But yeah, I mean, there should be a more better consistency to where you have this guy that is up there when it comes to best receivers in the game. And if you have a quarterback like Watson in that sense, there should be some consistency to make sure he's always involved in the offense. There shouldn't be any type of sense, like you said, of forgetting or like leaving him out of the game plan and using other guys when he's the best receiver on the team. And I'd say probably the third dangerous weapon on his offense, right behind Chubb and Watson. You can put Watson, Chubb, whichever one, but yeah, within that range.
Ashley, who do you have?
Yeah, so I am actually, if I can get motivated enough after this podcast, I'm going to have a story up on this, but I will definitely have a story up on this at some point, if it's not later tonight. I'm going to go with Nick Chubb. So I'm going to go away from the pass catchers and just go, I'm so interested in this idea, and I've tried to get at this with different people all week, including Deshaun Watson today, Joel Bitonio today, about how he is going to impact this run game and really just open things up. And I've been thinking about all week, you know, this is why Wyatt Teller is such a good quote on this team, because Dan, when we were talking to him after the game, the Bucks game on Sunday, he brought up if opposing defenses tried to put 8 guys in the box, good luck. And I think that's probably right. Like, that's maybe the most honest and direct answer we've gotten about what this run game could look like with Deshaun Watson. I think playing with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt is going to be great for Deshaun Watson, but I also think it's going to be great for this running back room and for Nick Chubb specifically. And we talked about this yesterday, Dan, like the split second hesitation that it could cause when you see Deshaun Watson and Nick Chubb in the backfield together. And opposing defenses are probably going to even be wondering at times a split second, take them to realize where the ball is. And that split second is enough for Nick Chubb to run right past you and find that gap because he just needs that split second. So beyond the pass catcher answers, I do think Nick Chubb is really going to benefit a lot from Deshaun Watson playing alongside him and being the quarterback of this offense.
Doug, this run game is at its best when Joel and Wyatt are out there looking for matchups blocking and they leave Nick Chubb with one guy to beat. And I think we might have games where Nick Chubb carries the ball like 15 times and has 130 yards.
Yeah, it's like the Cooper discussion, right? It's quantity versus quality. That there was a world where, hey, I don't know. It's like there were times it's like, all right, well, they're going to throw to Amari Cooper. And they're going to give the ball to Nick Chubb. And like that's how they're going to try to win in the past 11 games. And so maybe quantities go down for the two best skill guys, but the quality goes up. So again, I'm really curious to see what it looks like because there's also a version of like, all right, if you got Deshaun Watson back there, I mean, do you want to, how often do you want to run it versus how often you want to let him do what he's going to do? So, but I do think it's right. I do think it's, and it is about the quality. I think the, you know, as much as this was an efficient offense in by many, many metrics while Jacoby Brissett was in there, I think there's going to be more explosion. There's just going to be more threat, right? That every time like a defense is going to feel more, whether you're throwing it or running it, they're going to be back on their heels a little bit more. So I do think that idea of you get a better version of Nick Chubb, even if the carries go down slightly.
So Doug, what is your answer to this question?
So I'm refuting my own answer before I even give it because I was like, yeah. No, I like this. It's a little off the beaten path. And I was like, no, it's actually wrong. So I'll give it anyway. I said Jedrick Wills. Because I thought the idea of, listen, like I, you know, sometimes you'd watch Jacoby Brissett and it's like, man, that guy's just kind of standing there holding the ball, kind of waiting for stuff to happen. And when he starts to move, he doesn't move all that fast. But then like you looked at the PFF numbers of sack percentage and how often he was hurried. And they have a stat about like the number of pressures that turn into sacks. And like Jacoby Brissett's not that bad. And then you look at Deshaun Watson and like 18, 19, 20 Deshaun Watson is like most sacks, third most sacks. So I was like, oh, Jed Wills, who is 43rd out of the 58 tackles who have played enough snaps, 43rd in like pressure percentage allowed, right? Jack Conklin's 11th. So Jed Wills, you know, was giving it up a little bit at left tackle. And I was like, oh, you get a more mobile guy back there who can move around and sort of like make up for your mistakes. And I was like, no, that's wrong. Deshaun Watson holds the ball. So I don't know.
I knew you would come up with somebody weird. I thought you might say like Corey Bohorquez.
Was I hearing things? Did you say Jed Wills? Was Jed Wills your answer?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. See, we're going to leave somebody out, I think, who I was also thinking of that we're going to have an honorable mention section.
That's okay. Dan will say it. Dan still has his, though.
I do. I'm actually, I'll just say
that. We'll have an honorable mention section.
Doug, we respect your answer, but we're going to move on from it.
Yeah.
It's inexplicable and not worth talking about. Anyway.
That'd be a great description for this podcast in general. Not this episode, but just the whole podcast.
I'm going to throw out one. I actually probably would have said Nick Chubb, but I knew Ashley was going to say Nick Chubb.
Let's be honest. You knew I was writing it today, and that's on the forefront of my mind. Recency bias.
So mine is not just a player, but also the unit that player represents. Mm. And I'm going to go with Myles Garrett.
Oh, that's not who I thought you were going to say. Even when you said the unit that player represents, that's not who I thought you were going to say.
Interesting.
I thought you were going to say David Njoku in the tight ends.
Yeah.
That's so a good one. That's a really, Doug, you should have said.
That's who I said we were going to leave off. That's who I thought was going to leave off because, Dan, you are, like, I mean, rightfully so, I think the most, how will I look at this? You are the most objective observer of David Njoku on this podcast, and I think I won't say critical because that has too negative of a connotation.
I've come around on Njoku this year.
You have come around on him, but you definitely, I think, have been the most wary of, I think, overhyping what David Njoku is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's probably fair.
But I do think, I mean, Deshaun Watson has historically used his tight ends. I don't have the numbers in front of me, so these might be a little off, but I think like 12% of his touchdowns when teams are in 12 personnel, some crazy stat, have like been to tight ends, like 20% of his touchdowns and 12 personnel have come to tight ends. So great. Great stat if you're David Njoku, but I think Mary Kay, you know, has the one who's been saying that David Njoku really, I think, could be unlocked, that he's never had a quarterback like Deshaun Watson throwing him the ball. We maybe, Browns fans are hoping, got a little taste of that with his 12-yard one-handed Odell Beckham Jr.-like touchdown catch last week against the Bucks, but I think that's going to be really interesting to see how he uses those guys, but David Njoku in particular. But anyways, Dan, on to Myles Garrett and the edge rushers.
Yeah, so I'm looking for the quote from Jadeveon Clowney from back in June. And he basically said he was going to go where Deshaun Watson went. Like he said, if Deshaun would have gone to Atlanta, he was going to go to Atlanta. So I'm looking for why he, but the point was basically having a great quarterback makes life easier on the defense. And that's, you know, you're going to be in positions where you can rush the passer more because you're going to be playing from ahead. There's not as much pressure on you as a defense. If your offense can go out and score, you can play a little more, you can take some more chances because if you give up a score, your offense can keep, you know, you can keep pace. You can get into a shootout. I can't find the exact quote.
I found the quote, I believe. Is it this, Dan, where he said, I talked to him a few times before he signed and after he signed. We stayed in touch during the whole thing. If he comes here or if I come, what is going to happen? I told him if he goes, then I will follow him over here and I will go back. That is what it came down to. Like, he just straight up said, that is what it came down to, him re-signing with the Browns.
Yeah, and I think he just, you know, he kind of laid out this idea that life is easier for a defense when the offense is effective. And Deshaun makes the offense that much more effective than it was going to be. You know, no disrespect to Jacoby, who played great, probably had the best year of his career. But it's just different with Deshaun Watson. Now you can go out there and there's going to be opportunities for these guys to rush the passer that maybe they didn't have before. And so, yeah, I'm going... I should have said Njoku. Doug, you should have said Njoku. But
no,
I'm going
Doug
Myles.
Should have said
I'm going
Myles Njoku. That's a good answer still, Dan. I could have said Njoku, but I took a more unconventional answer. Now you two just went more unconventional than me and not directly like impacted by Deshaun Watson being out there in terms of the offense. But I do think this is fair to say that these edge rushers, I mean, overall, like, I remember that Jadeveon Clowney quote. I know we didn't find the exact one that you were thinking of, but I remember the gist of it. And it's that when you are an edge rusher as a defense, when you have a quarterback like Deshaun Watson, you can simply be more aggressive as a defense in a lot of ways because you can take more risks. So for the edge rushers, what's that look like? It comes with, like, you know, rushing the quarterback and those kind of plays. Like, I think when we talk about this defense needing game-changing plays, and when we talk about the kind of quarterback Deshaun Watson is, like, there should be almost like this chain reaction, I think, when you have a quarterback like him. And part of that chain reaction is going to be that this defense feels like it can play more freely or more aggressively because they know they have a quarterback who kind of, I guess, makes it possible for their margin of error to be larger as a unit. And that's a really interesting idea.
Here's the quote I was looking for. The question was if his decision this year was about offensive personnel, if that mattered. And he said, it did this year. I was all about where my boy Deshaun was going. When I talked to them, I said, I played with him. He kept us off the field a lot. I was like, I know you're going to keep us off the field. You put up a lot of points, put us in rushing situations instead of having to stop the run all the time. I just wanted to go play with him and see what I can do with him again. I only read the quote. That's just me taking a victory lap. That I am right in picking Myles Garrett and the pass.
And can I say I'm going to be full on, I think, campaigning this year for Jadeveon Clowney to be our Good Guy Media Award winner. Because quotes like this, man, he just tells it like it is. He says what's ever on his mind. When you talk about quality over quantity, that's a Jadeveon Clowney interview. Because, man, we don't talk to him every week. But when we do, it's always eventful and newsworthy.
I will say this about David Njoku. It's, again, I think it's a quality versus quantity discussion. That in 20 and 21, when he was smothered by the Austin Hooper experience, David Njoku had one game out of 28 where he had at least six targets, like they weren't using him. This year in nine games, he's been targeted at least six times. So six out of nine games, he's gotten at least six targets. In 2018, he had 8 of 15 games where he had at least six targets, right? So they used him. And then like then he was hurt, right? And then Kevin Stefanski got here and they brought in Austin Hooper and they didn't use David Njoku. They are using him this year, right? I mean, I think like, again, but will you get even a better quality of throw and stretch the field? And we've seen Njoku, right? The Chargers game, like this is a guy that can do some stuff down the field. And so that idea, and maybe like the next time there's a pass in the back of the end zone, he can jump like a foot lower. And because the pass will be slightly more on target compared to what he had to do last time. So, again, the quantity has been there for David Njoku, who, as you guys said all offseason, is their number two receiver. But the quality of the throws should increase with Deshaun Watson.
Pretty easy targets, too, some of them. Tight end screens, things like that. Okay, let's do another break here. And then when we come back, we are going to get into the prediction business. Welcome back to the Orange Brown Talk podcast, our Deshaun Watson round table. All right, let's do some predicting here. The Browns' record this season with Deshaun Watson will be blank. A lot of Browns fans are thinking running the table, maybe getting to 10-7, competing in the division. The Browns are 4-7. They did keep themselves alive with that win. They've got, let's see if I can do this off the top of my head, Houston at Cincinnati versus Baltimore versus the Saints, at Washington and at Pittsburgh. So not like a murderer's row schedule necessarily.
It's an interesting schedule game discussion that we could have here.
Yeah.
I will say, just to interrupt very, very quickly, the four teams the Browns have beaten so far this year have a combined 20 wins, right? So the four teams they have beaten have a combined 20 wins. That's an average of that's an average of 5 wins per team, right? The 6 teams you just named, Dan, they have a combined 30 wins, which is an average of 5 wins per team. So anyway, the quality of teams the Browns have managed to beat is similar to the quality of teams they have left on their schedule. Just wanted to throw out that math.
And it's just like interesting because like the Ravens are weird right now. Like who knows what you're going to get from them week in and week out. The Commanders are not like the giant joke necessarily that everyone thought they were going to be. Like, hey, they might actually be all right. So it's interesting. They match up well with Cincinnati. We know that. Like, this is an interesting stretch. The Saints aren't, you know, great necessarily. We know what the Texans are. I think we can make a prediction at what all these picks are going to be like. Like, they could vary. You can chart a world where they win all these games, right?
So does anybody want to make that case? Does anyone want to plant their flag and say the Browns are going 6-0 and they're going to be, you know, they could end up AFC North champs? No one. Okay, that's fair. I didn't expect that. 5-1? Then you're at least in the wild card hunt?
Like, pardon me, it's interesting. Like, it's possible, right? But like, it's just so hard. Like, I just can't get over the fact that he has not played in 700 days in a regular season game. And I think this transition might be more seamless than a lot of people are expecting, like because of what we know of how he's been preparing and how he might fit with the parts around him. But I don't know. 5-1 is a lot to ask right now, like for a team that's 4-7, you know?
Okay.
Let me hear 5-1. Do you have 5-1? No, 6-0, no, 6-0. 5-0, 4-2. Who's got a 4-2? 4-2, actually, Bastock, 4-2.
Yeah, that's kind of
Dan Levitt's got a 4-2. Dan Levitt, 4-2.
I think we're at 8-9 for the second straight year, honestly.
I mean, I predicted they would go 8-9. That was my season prediction. So I guess if I want to be one of those guys who's like, well, I made my season prediction, I'm sticking with it, I got to say 4-2. You know, it's interesting because they have Houston here who they should beat pretty easily. I mean, they could start Kellen Mond at quarterback in this game and they'd beat the Texans. Cincinnati is a team they match up really well with. Like, Kevin Stefanski has dominated the Bengals, but I still just don't I don't completely trust that the Bengals aren't going to figure this thing out eventually, right? And like just not get boat raced by the Browns every time they play them.
So the Bengals
play the Chiefs this weekend, yes. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's like an AFC Championship game rematch, whatever. I'm not so sure that like if that hosting the Browns next week isn't the biggest game the Bengals have left.
Yeah.
Honestly, can you imagine you're the Bengals? How much the Bengals want to beat the Browns?
Right. Yeah, especially the time, because only to shut Greg Newsom up, right? Because like he just talks about them.
Jamar Chase is going to be back. You know, like Joe Burrow, like they're rounding into form a little bit. Their run game is still very susceptible. I think the Bengals are starting to figure it out a little bit, and they know the Browns have had their number. So the idea of like, I thought absolutely first time around in Cleveland, no Jamar Chase. Like, all right, that matches up very well for the Browns. Now I think it might swing back. Like, I think the Bengals might be wearing, you know, this is like the rivalry game now. Like the Bengals have they made a Super Bowl, but they can't beat the Browns. And now the Browns are coming in like, oh, they had Deshaun Watson. The Bengals want to be like, no. So like, I think there's going to be a lot of energy to that game. I think the Bengals really want to win that game, not just for the standings, but sort of like, hey, just because you got this new quarterback doesn't mean you're going to take over this division now. So I think that's going to be a really tough game for the Browns in Cincinnati.
Irie, I think what makes this hard is we don't know what this looks like. And there is like a super optimistic, like everything goes right version of this where the Browns offense is just completely unstoppable for the next six games. And it's like, whoa, they figured it out. It was magic. They just needed to add Deshaun Watson. Like that is the super optimistic. They can still make the playoffs and win the division. And I think there's like a small percentage that could be true. I wouldn't bet on it, but I think that's what makes this complicated. It could be, yeah, maybe they'll just go 3-3, but there is like a tiny percentage where they could just maybe be this team we all thought they could be with Deshaun.
You know what, Dan? As much as we're talking about Watson and his offense and if Watson will be the quarterback that we know him to be in his first game since week 17 of 2020, I mean, the doubts, at least for me, is not even coming so much from the offense. The offense will be the offense, whether or not. It's really the consistency of everybody else, the defense, especially in attack. I mean, 11 games into the season, we just saw not only the best performance from this Browns defense, but this was the first game where when hitting an obstacle, they didn't just stout and just give up. They actually responded with aggressiveness and were, you know, showed resilience for crying out loud. I mean, multiple times after the Browns offense fell down and we're still down 17-10, the Browns defense still came back, force pumps, three and out. I mean, from that all the way to the clutch sack by Myles Garrett on Tom Brady, you know, in overtime, this was the first game where this happened. There are still doubts when it comes to the consistency and even the question of if the Browns defense even fully got it together. So as many points as the Browns put up, are we really expecting this Browns offense to be that dynamic offense just off bat, to be outscoring everyone so the defense doesn't have to worry about playing a lick of defense? I'm not sure when it comes to that. So as much as we're talking about the offense, which is fair, which is understandable, there's still doubts within everybody else because Watson is not playing both sides of the ball, nor is he going to return the ball. So those are where the doubts come from regarding the overall impact of this team in the final six games.
Irie just rained on our Deshaun Watson roundtable by reminding us about the defense.
Look, man, I'm sorry. You know what? I forget if it was you or Ashley. I forget. But one of – might have been Doug. It was probably even Doug who said this, just calling it like it is, honestly. So I'm sorry, but – you know, when Watson, let's say that Sunday the Browns, let's say the Texans win the coin toss, they choose to defer, Browns get the ball to start the half, we see Watson on the field, not the whole Brissett goes on and then runs and gives the ball to Watson towards like Doug was saying last week, but Watson goes on the field, leads, you know, and we know the Browns, Stefanski and Alex are the best at the opening script, and they go out and construct no more than 6 to 8 plays that lead to a touchdown within a minute 40. Wow, beautiful. Look at Watson. sticking it to former fans that are booing with the crazy signs and all that. And then comes the Browns defense on the field, reminding us part of the reason of why they are in the situation now. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, like if Damian Pierce runs for like 55 yards on his first touch. Go ahead, Todd.
It can happen.
I don't care what Deshaun Watson does in his first drive, because the Browns score in their first drive all the time. I want to know what Deshaun Watson does on the third and the fourth and the sixth drive, right? That's where you're going to see the difference. We know they can script an opening drive, but like, is he going to save them in situations where it's like, oh, wait, that didn't, you know, the thing Stefanski called up didn't work, but Deshaun saved them. I'll be very curious about that. The other thing I think you have to keep in mind with all this stuff, the Browns, Deshaun Watson coming back is the biggest in-house player addition in the league, right? The second biggest one might be Chase Young coming back for the Washington Commanders, and that will affect the Browns. T.J. Watt wasn't on the field when the Browns beat the Steelers. He's back now. J.K. Dobbins wasn't on the field when the Browns beat the Ravens first time around. He's now in the window to come back from injured reserve. There are some other teams. Jamar Chase, right, was not on the field when the Browns who weren't themselves also played some teams who weren't themselves. And some of these teams are going to be more themselves. So I do think, I mean, you look at it, Cincinnati, Baltimore, and Washington, those are three teams trying to make the playoffs. And then Pittsburgh, New Orleans, and Houston are three teams that are not going to make the playoffs. And how lively could New Orleans and Pittsburgh be? I think Pittsburgh by the end of the year, that last game, especially if somehow the Browns are pretty good, like if the Browns are 4-1 with Deshaun Watson and somehow like in a playoff race, and the Steelers could ruin that for them, I think that could be a heck of a game. They're 3-4 with Kenny Pickett. They were 1-3 without him. The Browns beat Mitch Trubisky before they were going to put in Pickett. Not that Pickett's great, right? But like the version of the Steelers that the Browns beat earlier in the year, that's not who the Steelers are anymore either. Just like the Browns are not going to be that Browns team by the time they play Pittsburgh again.
Okay, so we left off at 4-2. I think I'm landing. I'm in that 3-3, 4-2 range. That's sort of where I expect them to be. Do we sort of have consensus there that like 3-3, 4-2, I mean, no one wants to go crazy with like 5-1 or 6-0. Nobody wants to be like, they're going to go 1-5.
I just think there's a world, like I said, it's reasonable, I think, to expect them like, oh, they could win all six of these games, or you could be even crazier and say they should win all six of these games. But I just think like I just can't ignore that human element. And like you said, Dan, like it's just hard when we haven't seen what this looks like yet. You don't want to maybe get expectations too high, considering like, yes, it's Deshaun Watson's first game back, but these other guys have been at this for 11 games now. And like, I kind of think it's just hard to maybe break some of the bad habits that have arisen, or like change the mentality totally. Like maybe like a big mentality shift is going to happen, but that human element in all of this is just hard to ignore.
Yeah, I think that there was a question I was going to ask what we learned about this team in the first 11 games, but we got things to do. But there was a part of me that wanted to say maybe this team isn't quite as, like, we talk about this team like they're way more talented than some other teams, but really, are they? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think mine
that's a big thing to float out there and say, hey, let's move on. But
I mean, but we have like, there are questions, I think mine would have been similar about, like, there are questions about how this team has been built in like some of these draft picks. Like, this is not, like you said, it's not, I think, as cut and dry talent wise as we thought, or maybe not like talent wise, but just like how these pieces fit together. And if like prospective talent has developed the way we were expecting it to.
Do you guys know what Deshaun Watson's record as a starting quarterback is?
It's not spectacular. Is it still a losing record?
It's 28-25.
Well, this is when with the Scott Patsko line of wins are not a quarterback stat, Doug.
No, but we're also talking about, we're not talking about how good Deshaun Watson is. We're talking about how many games the Browns are going to win while he is the starting quarterback. And the point is, no matter how good he is, if the rest of the team doesn't do what it has to do, the last time it was a full-time starting quarterback, his team was 4-12. Now they went to the playoff for 2 years before that, right? Because they were good enough and they had guys like Hopkins and Clowney and other guys that could support it, but he can't do it by himself. And so if this team cannot stop the run, and if this team is blowing coverages, and Kevin Stefanski, he doesn't have the art of the play calling down after the first script. He can't do it by himself. So I'm not saying, like, that's the thing, Ashley, right? If you're evaluating a quarterback, but we're evaluating the team in this discussion, how good are they going to be? You know, he didn't snap his fingers and magically win, you know, if you think they're going to go 6-0, well, that's going to be the rest of the team doing what it has to do. And as Irie said, like, I think what these first 11 games have shown us is that we have more questions about the rest of the team than we thought we had coming into the year.
Yeah, and then listen, the 2018 Texans won 11-5. I was looking at this yesterday. That wasn't like the 07 Cavs and like LeBron James dragging Sasha Pavlovich to the finals. They had some dudes on that team. You know, you mentioned DeAndre Hopkins. You know, offensively, there was certainly some things to be desired, but they had DeAndre Hopkins. You know, Will Fuller was on that team. Lamar Miller isn't a terrible back. You know, he's pretty, he's fine. Defensively, you had Tyrann Mathieu and Justin Reed and J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney and Whitney Mercilus. Like,
my God, how did they not win the Super Bowl? They were awesome.
So, I mean, Deshaun was amazing. And, you know, I'm not saying that to take away from anything. I'm just saying, like, we should be a little cautious talking about the Texans some of those years as if they were, like, as if he was throwing to, like, you know, it was Deshaun Watson and, I don't know, I don't want to insult any. I was going to say Deshaun Watson and, like, the Kent State Golden Flashes, but Kent State's good now.
Yeah. Don't insult your alma mater, Dan.
I know. All right. Listen, here's what we're going to do. Lance Reisland is going to tell us a little bit about what this offense can look like with Deshaun Watson. We're going to take a break, then we're going to make our picks. So here's Lance. Lance, how are you?
Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm doing well. All right, let's get to it. Deshaun Watson is back. So I wonder, as you've watched this Browns offense, let's start with kind of the things that might stay the same. What are the things they currently do that they'll still kind of continue to do, you think, with Deshaun Watson at quarterback?
Well, I think their run schemes, I think most of their schemes will stay the same. I think he just gives you an added dimension to each scheme. So, you know, I think I heard what you said the other day and on a podcast in terms of, I think people, because of his off-field issues, people are kind of are going to be in shock. This is at a high-level, elite, top-five type quarterback who can compete with, like, the Mahomes and the, you know, the Allens. This is the type of talent he is. So in terms of what will stay the same, I think the schemes will stay the same. Maybe formationally they'll be a little bit more spread. I still see them running zone and counter, but he's going to give you a lot more options in each of those schemes. Pass-wise, I'm actually interested to see what they did pass-wise. You know, in 2020, he led the, you know, he had 4,823 yards passing. They were in a lot of shotgun. They were in 83% shotgun, which was the fourth most in the league. And I'm interested to see how much shotgun he's in. So the Browns have shown they can run all their stuff out of shotgun. But I think schematically, they'll be pretty much the same. He just gives you a tons more options with his feet and his arm.
Yeah, so when you mentioned that, the shotgun, you know, I'm thinking back to the spring when we saw him, and of course in training camp we saw it a little bit too, when he was getting those first team reps. It wasn't just shotgun. They were doing a lot of pistol looks. You could just sort of see how they wanted to use him in different ways, you know, especially with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt in the backfield. I mean, actually, we were starting to see those two guys together with him a lot too.
Well, yeah, once again, the pistol's great because you get the downhill run. I think he feels comfortable from his Clemson days in the gun. It does give you a lot of options with, you know, you can run zone read option, his ability to press the edge on their levels concept now. You can use Hunt in the flat a little bit. The run pass options are there. The third down run game is there with him. Once again, you know, you're talking zone read. Well, they love zone. Now they just add the quarterback to it. So now you're taking away a defender or two with his talent, you know, with his arm and his feet.
So when you go back to what he did with Houston, and then you also mentioned Clemson too, what are the things that Deshaun Watson is really, really good at?
Well, he's a true dual threat guy. He runs like a running back, and he is a true pocket guy. So he's a rare Josh Allen type in terms of he can run like a running back and throw like the high level quarterbacks from the pocket. He's got incredible versatility. Like you said, you know, that third medium in the NFL is so big, and he can make plays with his feet, with his arm from the pocket. I think his number one, two of his best qualities, I think. One is he processes information, and his ability to process information allows him to use his arm talent. And arm talent is kind of a everybody thinks just arm strength. Well, no, it comes with knowing where you're going with the ball, anticipation, location, accuracy. He does all those things because he processes so well. So he knows where everybody's supposed to be. Then what makes him extremely dangerous is that if that doesn't work, he can improvise and make plays that are off schedule and improvise and make huge plays. So he is a nightmare for a defense, either in the pocket or outside the pocket.
So who do you think in this offense benefits the most from having, excuse me, from having him back?
Well, he creates conflict. So right now the Browns are a run first team and scouting report tells you that. So you're getting one high hat, you're getting safeties down in the box. So he creates conflict for the defense. Are you going two high hats and stopping him? Or are you going one high hat to stop Nick Chubb? So you kind of got the best of both worlds for the Browns, offensive staff. So I think, Nick Chubb and people, a lot of people have thought that, Nick Chubb will, kind of suffer with him coming back. I actually think he's going to be rewarded because he's going to get lighter boxes to run into. I think the top level guys are going to be fantastic. Cooper, Njoku, those guys. But the guys like Bryant and DPJ and Schwartz and all these guys that are kind of on the fringe of becoming good pros, elite quarterbacks turn the corner with those guys. So those second tier guys, I won't be shocked with the first tier guys, but those second tier guys are going to be really, really good, I think.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the exciting thing about this last six games, regardless of whether this team gets themselves back into the playoff races, we're going to get some answers on some of these guys. Like, how does David Bell look, with Deshaun? How does Anthony Schwartz look? Some of these guys that maybe you're questionable about, you don't know if they have a future or not, they're going to kind of have a chance to prove it here that they belong as one of those guys that Deshaun Watson can rely on.
Well, I've said this before. There's very few quarterbacks you win because of. There's lots of quarterbacks you win with. Brissett was a quarterback you win with. Deshaun Watson is a quarterback you win because of. So he is going to make all those guys, they're going to be maxed in terms of their ceilings, and he's going to push them to get to where they can, or like you said, answering the questions, can they compete at this level? Are they part of the Browns' future offensively? His ability, now you bring into like scramble drill and you bring in deep passes to Schwartz and you bring in different stuff that maybe hasn't been a part of what the Browns do. Because when you have a guy who can improvise, things go off schedule a bunch. And when things go off schedule with a good quarterback like Jacoby, you got to throw away or the ball is thrown in the ground and you live to fight another day. Every play is a possible home run with a quarterback like Watson. So it should be interesting.
So what are you most excited to watch? It doesn't even have to just be on Sunday, but just as the rest of this season plays out with him.
Well, it's funny. I'm excited to see a lightened box and I want to see Nick Chubb run because eventually I want to see the what our team's going to do. Cause he is running the ball really, really well right now. And if you look at some of these boxes he's getting 7, 8, 9 boxes on the snap. So I want to see, do the Browns formationally get in spread more, which means nothing to a power run game. It just means you're taking people out of the box. And I want to see the combination of a high-level running back with a high-level offensive line and a high-level quarterback. Because when Watson was in Houston, their offensive line was terrible and their skill was just okay, and he still played at an elite level. Now he's got a top five running game. He's got a top one or two running backs. He's got a number one receiver. He's got a tight end who seems to be emerging. So I'm interested to see just the step. Do they improve like, everybody thinks they're going to improve?
Okay, did I miss anything? Was there something you wanted to add about Deshaun that I didn't ask you about?
No, just going back to what you said, I just think, his off-field issues have kind of clouded in terms of his on-field play, which is what I watch. I watch the film and watching him. And when you watch him in 2020, he is a elite top three quarterback. And I'm interested to see how that fits in with Cleveland. I'm interested to see how it fits in with the future and how long it'll take him to get to that level. Can he get to that level? How will he play underneath center? All those kind of things. I'm just looking forward to seeing what happens for sure. Like everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, listen, Browns fans have never seen a quarterback this talented. That's not saying anything bad about other guys that have played quarterback for this team, right? But this guy, the talent he brings, and we still have to see how it translates onto the field after missing 2 years of football. I don't think Browns fans have ever seen a quarterback with this much talent.
Oh, no, in terms of physical skills, and when you talk about weight, you know, all the football terms, weight transfer, throwing on the run, you know, and then you talk about leadership and all that, things, the tangibles, there's never been a quarterback like this in Cleveland. Now, again, like you said, you have to do it on the field. There's been a lot of time off, but physical skills between the white lines, there's never even been anybody close. He's a special talent. He's a top five guy that, you know, once again, you win because of, you know, you win, you don't win with, you win because of. So it should be interesting for sure.
All right, Lance Risel breaking down to Deshaun Watson, what he might look like with the Browns on Sunday, taking the field for the first time against his old team, the Houston Texans. Lance, thanks for the time.
As always, thanks for having me.
And back one last time on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast, switching gears, because this is sort of our pseudo preview pod. We are making our pick for Sunday's game in Houston, Deshaun Watson's return to where he did lead that team to the playoffs. Right now, the Browns are favored by 7 points on DraftKings. The total for this game is 47. So, Doug, what's your pick?
Man, like, I feel like all those numbers are like right on it. The Texans are bad, right? The Texans are bad. So it feels only given the Browns only given 7 in that game. I don't know that it's going to be magical right away for Deshaun Watson, but I'll take 28-20 Browns win, which I will take the Browns minus the 7. That's right, like right at the number for the total. So I'd stay away from that bet. But I just think going up and down the line from a talent perspective, like Pierce is a good running back. Can they run the ball on the Browns like everybody else has? Maybe. But I also think I'm very aware of the thing that Ashley has said all year, which is like, if this felt like a team that was waiting for Deshaun to come back, what if they were, and now he's back and everybody's like, oh yeah, no, now we're going to be good. No, he's back. I'm going to be really good at what I do. And it's like, oh, well, I actually kind of am holding it against you that you weren't playing at the same level in the first 11 games. Cause kind of like who the quarterback is shouldn't determine how much better you are at your job, but welcome back. So maybe it's going to look like, yes, it does look like a Super Bowl roster now because everybody was frozen while they were waiting for him. And maybe they'll go down there and blow the Texans off the field. So I would not want to bet on the Texans in this game. So I'll take the Browns minus 7, 28-20.
Irie, what's your pick?
All right. So I'm going to take the Browns in this. Somewhat close to Doug's score. I actually came out to 28-23. And I'll leave it at that.
All right. So the Texans to cover. And the under. Okay, Ashley, what are you picking in this game?
So I am going to go with the over and the Browns at -7 at 31-24. I think I'm going to go right on that 7. I think this will be the second highest scoring game for the Browns this year, save for that win against the Bengals. So I don't think that 31 number is totally like impossible for them with a new quarterback. Like I think this transition might be a little easier than we think, but they might not totally blow the doors off of Houston, given some of the other issues. I don't know. So I'll pick it right at that 7 mark.
Okay. So Ashley, the push and then the over. Listen, Kevin Stefanski, I know you're an Orange and Brown Talk listener. I know you have this new toy that you have been waiting for ever since things fell apart with Baker Mayfield. I know you've been waiting all season to unleash this quarterback better than you've ever coached before in your life. But I would implore you, I'm going to be the old school run the ball guy. Take it easy this week. Let Deshaun ease his way back in. The Houston Texans on Football Outsiders have the 30th worst rush defense DVOA. Only the Browns and Packers are worse. Now, I'm not saying not to let Deshaun Watson have some fun and make some throws and get people excited, but come out, let Nick Chubb kind of establish some things, and then just let Deshaun Watson do the easy stuff for a week and just ease him back into it. That's what I think Kevin should do, and I think he will do that to an extent. I don't think he's going to come out and throw the ball as much as he wants to with Deshaun Watson this week, because I think it's really smart to just let him work his way back, shake off some of that rust. So I think it's going to be a lower scoring game. I think the Browns will cover. I actually wanted to pick like I kind of wanted to pick that 30-15 that the Dolphins won by last week, but the Texans, that's not going to happen again, right? So I'm going to say Browns 28, Texans 10. I think they're going to win pretty easily, and I think they're going to just lean on Nick Chubb and let Deshaun ease his way back in, and I think we're going to come away from this game feeling really good about how this offense can look once Deshaun Watson is kind of fully unleashed. But I don't think you have to fully unleash him this week. I think you can be really basic and just go beat the Texans and kind of save some stuff for Cincinnati next week.
I agree with that, but also what I would do is I'd have a play where I lined up Jacoby Brissett as an offset tight end, and I'd have Deshaun lateral it to him and then have Jacoby throw it to Deshaun.
Yes, I agree.
And the rest of the time run the ball conservatively.
There we go. Our preview here for the Browns Texans, our Deshaun Watson roundtable. We'll cover everything that happens, of course.
Can I interrupt as you're shutting this down? Because it piqued my interest and I couldn't find it online. I didn't see an over-under on Deshaun passing yards. What would you set it on? What would you put that at? Like the idea of like how rusty he is, how they want to use him. 225?
I was thinking like the 220 range. So if you're saying 225, I was kind of thinking in that range. That's not a super conservative number, but it's like, it's conservative enough that you'd at least maybe consider taking the over there. Yeah, I think it's in the 220s.
All right, well, here we are at the Orange and Brown Talk Sportsbook. Everybody, so it's coming on January 1st. Could we make our own sportsbook? Could we just make this podcast a sportsbook? I don't know how it works.
If they could make Dogecoin work, I have a feeling I could make Doug Bucks work. Would you like some Doug Bucks? Like, that just has a nice ring to it. Doug Bucks. It has Doug's face on it.
Oh, if money with my face on, I'm for.
Yeah.
If I gave out the routing number to my checking account and just had people send money in and out, right, then we're a sports book.
I don't know if you want to give them the possibility to send money out of it, Doug. Here. That'd be a bad idea.
0714. Just send me your money. I set it at 225. Just include, are you over or under the number?
Oh, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, Doug will give you his social security number, routing number, and checking account number. Yes, and his driver's license number.
It's going to be the Doug Steal Doug's Identity podcast. If you can do it first and prove that you did it, you get, I don't know what you get, 100 Doug bucks.
Also, the name of his childhood best friend and the school he attended in fifth grade.
And his mother's maiden name is the name of the street he grew up on. And his, remember when I told you, Doug, like that whole thing about the fake name with the first pet and the street name? I'm like, you know, that's just a scam to steal your passwords, right?
See, I beat the robot there because I didn't have friends when I was a child. So take that, robot. By the way, last time Deshaun Watson was a starting quarterback, 16 games, 14 of them more than 225 passing yards. So we might be a little low.
Guy, I mean,
Jacoby Brissett also did that like 7 or 8 times in the first 11 games.
Deshaun Watson's really good. Like, I think that's something that I've made this point before, and I think it's important. Like, again, sort of like Donovan Mitchell when the Cavs brought him in. I don't think people understood how good Donovan Mitchell was. I don't know if people fully understand how good Deshaun Watson actually is. Like, he's really good. So
do you think, by the way, because the last time we saw him live, wasn't it windy?
Yes.
And it was like, oh, well, that guy, I don't know. That's fine. Yeah. But it's like, no, that is not usually what it looks like.
And he still made at least one throw that I remember in that game that was like, whoa, that was, I think it was with Ronnie Harrison draped around his ankle. The guy's really good. You're going to see it here over the next 6 games. Okay, that's why we did a whole podcast about him. Our Deshaun Watson roundtable and our preview pod of Sunday's game against the Texans. We'll cover it all at Cleveland.com/Browns. We'll have our post-game pod as usual. Just get subscribed on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Leave us 5-star reviews and say nice things about us. We like that when you can do that as well. And then also become a Football Insider subscriber. Cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page to get that newsletter. Get access to those stories on Cleveland.com/Browns that you need to be a subscriber to read, and also become one of our text subscribers. So we'll give you analysis, breaking news, all that stuff right to your phone. You can avoid Twitter and everything else. Just let us text you. Cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page. For Ashley, Doug, Irie, I am Dan. Thanks for listening, everybody.